Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today is October the 3rd, and today we're going to be talking about maps. Welcome to Strat Chat.
Hello.
Hey guys, what's up?
Yay, maps!
Woo! We got some map makers on today, along with White Wing, Toyota, and myself. We also have Cantuva and Time Twister, both well-known map makers in the StarCraft community. So, what are we talking about today?
Cantuva, in fact, has been referred to officially as the map-making bourgeois by at least one map.
I like it.
No, I wouldn't be
Yeah, that
able.
works.
I wouldn't be able without the other guys. I'm like, seriously, I wouldn't be able without the other guys.
Oh, so modest.
I'm like, seriously, not joking.
And I hear that Time Twister is pretty. Time Twister guy is pretty good at making maps too.
I do all right. I do a lot of weird stuff, so don't win any contests.
So just
yeah,
to...
it's because he goes like for non-standard maps and others like that. But he's very good.
All right, so why don't we make sure just so you guys, everyone knows who the two of you are, because a lot of people don't pay that much attention to map makers, and they really should. Uventak here has won a number of map contests in the past. He's done some ridiculously good maps, including maps for Starbow and for Shoutcraft, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
What would you say your favorite maps are? That you've done?
You're doing this again.
I'm doing it to you.
He already had asked me what were my favorite maps, but I can't really choose one because every map uses like a different idea. And it will be like choosing what do you like more, your left arm or your right. So I will say no map. No map is my favorite, except Samarra Mines and Foxtrot Labs.
All right, Foxtrot
was Ohana, by the way.
What?
He didn't make Ohana.
Yeah, I'll.
No,
no,
I didn't.
Among the ones he made.
Oh yes, of the ones he
yeah,
made.
Yeah, only
oh,
between
okay.
the ones I made.
Okay.
No.
Otherwise, the choice is clear.
Yep. Yeah. And Time Twister has made a number of extremely good maps as well, and some very interesting ones. They're not quite as popular because they haven't necessarily won the contests, although they've done well. Why don't you share which ones are your favorites that you've done?
I have like Sanctuary, or the newest version, Neo Sanctuary, was one of my favorites. I don't know if you want me to link that one or not. Then I also have Ion, another one of my favorites, how it did like a weird main natural kind of setup. And then I also have Preservation, which is like the 2v2 ladder map that's really good. So that makes me happy. Got something.
Yes,
somewhere.
That one was much better than the other 2v2 maps.
Yeah, I agree.
Without much difficulty. That one is very good. Very solid map. All right, so... why don't we get started with discussing why map making is important and why having good maps actually matters? So I guess the person asked first, Time Twister, why map making? Why are you interested in map making and why do you think map making is important?
Map making is a creative outlet. Still kind of, it's creative, but StarCraft related, so works for me. But it's definitely important because it's, StarCraft doesn't really change. After every expansion, you know, they add new units, but once the expansion's out, there's nothing new coming into the game except for the maps, where, you know, several other games have new guns or new heroes or whatever, so I think maps kind of help keep the variety strong in StarCraft, and it's definitely needed to prevent the game from going stale.
So, from a viewer and a player's standpoint, it's about variety to you.
Yes, absolutely. Variety. They do play a balance role, of course, obviously, but I think variety is their most important role.
All right. Uventak, why are you interested in map making, and why do you think maps are important?
Why I am interested in map making? Because it's my heroine. It's like the thing that when I come from the university, I just sit down and take a cup of coffee and start making maps. And that makes all the crap that happened in the day, all the much better. It keeps me alive, to say the least.
Oh.
And what is important for the game? Because otherwise we'll be playing on Blizzard Maps. Everyone likes Blizzard Maps, right? Yeah?
Yes. Please.
I like
yes.
it. I really
Blizzard has some, okay. Blizzard hasn't made all absolutely terrible maps. Some of their maps
No. I absolutely love, like, shitting on Blizzard. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be saying that. But I love, like, throwing crap at Blizzard. But the guys there really, really work their ass off and know how what they are doing. Even when it looks like they don't, many choices that they do, they are very, very logical. Believe it or not, it is the truth. Okay? Believe me.
All right, I do believe you.
Okay.
Teo, why do maps matter to you?
As, I guess, mainly a former player and now as a spectator, it's more about balance than variety in a way. But as in, it's really nice when a strategy that seems imbalanced is fixed by maps. I remember when Protoss finally got maps with decent thirds, like Cloud Kingdom, we could finally defend a third against Zerg, and that was awesome. And also, of course, there is the variety because maps drive the game forward because they kind of evolve together with the game. What is a good map today may have been terrible in 2011 and vice versa. So they kind of show how the game is evolving, which is always something that's really interesting to me. So, yeah.
All right, Chris?
Oh, man. I think the importance of maps is to, kind of like Teo said, it's to help the balance of things and make sure that each race is more or less represented properly. Because no one race, or like no two races are ever going to be perfectly balanced on a map. It's always going to have some kind of feature that favors one race or another. And so it's nice to have these different maps and kind of like progressive maps that try to push new ideas and force races into trying to do different things in order to get ahead than they would normally. I remember there's like an old quote, I don't want to get wrong, but I think it's from Day 9. It may be from Artosis or someone, but it's that you can win on any map once. In the sense that even if a map is imbalanced towards a race or whatever, you can still come up with some kind of ingenious way to play around the terrain and come up with something new. And I
Especially
think that's
if you're a walk pro coach.
Yes. So, I think maps are really important for kind of forcing players into innovation. That makes sense.
Yeah, so I would agree with that. Generally speaking, to me, maps are great because the game gets very boring if you're always playing on the same map. I agree with Time Twister that variety is the most important thing. I would get extremely bored playing on the same map over and over and over and over again, continuously forever. And a lot of the maps I absolutely love, I did just eventually get tired of. Especially since after you figure, as Chris mentioned, the innovation aspect, after you figure out like a lot of the strategies and tricks for a map and people have been playing it long enough that they know the cute tricks and things to look for and the hiding spots and the weird timings that can possibly occur on the maps, eventually that stuff stops working because everyone's figured out the map, in the current, trends of play. And none of that works anymore, and you pretty much just play standard or play slight deviations of standard at that point. And you do eventually get tired of that if you just play on the same map all the time. So,
One thing to say is that variety and balance are actually more tied than people think, because I feel like eventually, basically every map can almost end up being broken. For example, Daybreak. At first, it was the greatest standard map we'd ever seen. And 1 year later, it was completely and utterly broken by Swarm Hosts, and before that, by Broodlord Infestor, or Mech, or other Turtlings. boring strategies. Same can go for Alhanna with the Soul Train, although for some people it will never cease to be amazing. So yeah, eventually most maps run the risk of just ending up being broken. So that's also why you need to rotate maps. You need to force people to figure out things again and again. Otherwise, you just find the optimal strategy and you play that. And sometimes, easily, the optimal strategy may favor one race too much.
Yeah, and then there's also the introduction of new units when a new expansion comes out, or patches to the game for balance reasons, or not necessarily balance reasons per se, but because maps, as we'll discuss a little bit later, maps can solve almost any balance problem with a map redesign. But
for better
sometimes
or worse,
it's just for better or for worse. But sometimes it's just a question of stale gameplay. When a patch gets pushed through, you know, maybe it's because swarm hosts are the standard way to play, and everybody is tired of playing either with swarm hosts or against them. And even though the game might be balanced and the win rates might be 50-50 or so, it's just so dull no one wants to play it anymore. And if you don't mix up the matches when such a patch goes through or a change goes through, sometimes the new map becomes very imbalanced when the patch goes through, just to mix things up a bit. So in that sense,
Tempest, you would probably want to take this because you are like the one that prefers to make non-standard maps, especially because it's like you are the most affected. I have like my legacy nowadays is to make solid standard maps. Time Twister has the legacy of making more non-standard ones. And in this case, he tends to be more affected because things such as balance and other limitations. Nowadays, in my opinion, the biggest limitation we are suffering is not the game itself, but constrictions created by Blizzard, such as not allowing to have rocks that have more than 2,000 HP or less than 2,000 HP. Modifiers such as this, or different amount of resources per base.
I mean, I can understand why they do stuff like that. Like, if every mineral line had a different amount of minerals or an amount of minerals per patch, that would just be confusing map to map, especially when they're being changed every ladder season. But some restrictions are a little silly, and some restrictions can even be standardized. Yeah. So, I mean, if they allow two mineral layouts, like one with 6 minerals and one with 8, I mean, that would do a lot for map variety, and as long as those two were only used, it would work out.
We have already, like, stabilized the amount of resources. We have the half bases and the full bases. At least in the community of Team Liquid with the other map makers, where the half bases are not actually half bases, but have 6 middle patches and one normal Bespin Geyser or one rich Bespin Geyser. That's a half base compared to 8 middle patches and the... Go ahead.
Original Daybreak had that on the GSL version, the very first version.
Yeah,
The central fourth was a half base essentially, and it worked.
Okay, why don't
really,
we
really well.
Yeah, it did. Why don't we come back to this notion in a minute? And talk about something else first, just to make sure that everyone's on the same page with this discussion. The notion of balancing through maps rather than patches. So why don't we? I guess we need to establish exactly how a map can change game balance before we really get into the discussion of help changing the economy of the game or developmental rates, etc. by map design. So generally speaking, features on a map can drastically change the way units can function on that map. One of the best examples I can think of was from Wings of Liberty, and it was the maps Cloud Kingdom and Antigua Shipyards, which had Blink. All ends being extremely popular and very powerful because you could very easily blink into the main from right outside the natural. Terran had a very tough time defending that way back then, and this was well before Heart of the Swarm, when it became super popular again on maps like Yanzu, where you could just walk into the natural, and if the army's there, you blink into the main and blow stuff up. And if you walk into the natural, and if his army's not there and it's in the main to defend your blink, you blow stuff up in the natural. And then he comes down to defend, and then you blink into the main and blow stuff up. And it was, your army was just so much more mobile because of the design of the map. Whereas on other maps, say Daybreak, for example, you couldn't blink into the main at all unless you were already ravaging the natural. There was nowhere to blink into the main from. So blink strategies didn't exist in that sense. So, you know, the difference in map could make blink either very strong or very weak, relatively speaking. Plenty of other examples. Swarm hosts in Heart of the Swarm, we were still playing on Daybreak for a while. Swarm hosts in Daybreak were practically unbeatable because there was no path you could go around the swarm hosts.
The most obvious example is early game PvZ. If you don't have a wallable natural in early game PvZ, links kill everything Protoss, no matter what, and you can't secure an expansion. I think that's the easiest example, and it's the most extreme example of balance. And we saw that somewhat recently with Daedalus Point, which we were discussing before the show, where Protoss couldn't wall, and therefore they could not win games in PvZ, basically.
Yep. So with that notion established, I want to circle back to the exact discussion they were having regarding changing the statute of mineral patches, etc. With another example. So if everyone remembers the map Belshire Vestige, TVZ, the typical common strategy was for Terran to take the third base above the one from their main, or below it if they were on the top side, because that was their pushing pattern to attack the Zerg for third and fourth. They would be pushing along that lane. So rather than taking a further back and a base away from their opponent, they would take a forward base so that they could play aggressive and defend it with their aggression. That's a extremely strong strategy, which is the same thing Terrans did on Daybreak. When Daybreak was made, the original mapmakers, which were some GSL mapmakers from Korea, knew that Terran could do that.
Who was? Time to say, you know it. It was Wind Park,
It was either East Windy or...
Yeah, I think it was Wind Park.
I think it was Wind Park. Park, yeah.
Yeah.
And he knew that Terran could take that forward base and push and be very powerful on the map by pushing the middle lane just all the time constantly with aggression and then splitting up and going everywhere from that forward position. And they knew that position with the Planetary Fortress was almost unbreakable. For a very long time in that map. So they very deliberately reduced the amount of mineral patches in the Vespine gas there to make it less rewarding because it was positionally very powerful. So that was an attempt by a map maker to do exactly what they were, Time Twister and Cantuva were talking about here, in order to balance the game a little bit by modifying the position, the rewards for holding specific positions on the map. When you're limited to Blizzard's rule of 8 mineral patches and 2 geysers, or 6 gold patches and 2 geysers at each base, certain positions become significantly more rewarding than they otherwise maybe should be.
Right.
Would the two of you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that can increase or decrease, like the position of the Zelnaga Watchtower can make one base more rewarding than another, but not nearly as much as like resources would.
Yeah, this case, for example, in Echo, when I was making the map, I still remember Time Twister about the center bases. I was designing the center bases, especially around the fact that Terran will take the center bases in the high ground and push towards the 3 or 9 o'clock base that will have the Zerg taken. And I designed them. I don't know if you guys can like put a screenshot of the map so it can be easier for the people in the chat to
Chris
see.
Chris, you want to put that up?
Like, because I specially designed the map that way. In this case, for example, having a half base there in the center of the map would have been detrimental for me to create a balanced map, or at least a map that has the background idea that I wanted to pull up on it, where you can have the bases in basically a straight line attacking towards the Zerg 4 to base. But yeah, the amount of resources per base and the position you take the to place the bases on is very important, especially as you say, because Perit pushes. And curiously, Perit pushes is like the only time where you actually see the that kind of bases taken, other than in late game scenarios, which I love particularly.
That and Zerg's taking gold bases.
Yeah, that and Zerg taking gold bases
is a nightmare.
Yep.
Well, yeah. Why don't we?
For the spectators, it's a blast. At least until it happens every game on the same map. But the 20, 50 times that it happens, it will be very interesting for the spectators to see. Oh, will this greedy Zerg be able to hold the timing push of the Protoss? And then the timing push of the Protoss will be able to transition into a macro game. Who knows? Who knows, right?
Yeah,
that's the whole base of entertaining.
That's a good discussion to have right there. If we think back to Antigua Shipyard, which I brought up before in Wings of Liberty, we had one of the best Zerg players in the world at the time, and he's still extremely good, Lenok, who actually made that strategy popular of rushing the gold base and taking it immediately, especially against Protoss. And on Antigua Shipyard in particular, because of the way the middle of the map was designed, he would take the gold base and put spine crawlers there in these positions behind the mineral and the cliff with an overlord over so he could see on top of the cliff. And there was nothing Protoss could do to kill those spine crawlers because they were protected from zealots on almost every side. So zealots couldn't get in at them. He would have zerglings in time to help defend if he needed to. And stalkers couldn't hit them from the high ground without getting killed by them. So Zerg could just safely and reliably take a gold base on that map every game if they needed to, which, if I remember correctly, led to later versions of the map eliminating gold bases in a lot of tournaments and turning them into regular bases.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yep.
So
I think
we really
Snoot
do have to be careful with the use of
the gold and then Baneling Bust, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they would do that if you weren't super aggressive against the Zerg, they would do that to you as well. And I mean, it's just extra minerals. So I mean, there's no reason not to do it if you can reliably do it as Zerg. So why don't we discuss like special map features and things like that that get used sometimes into poor effect, but might be used well, such as the gold mineral.
Yeah, gold
time minerals. Twister. What uses do you see for gold minerals that would be done well? Can you see a good way to use gold minerals?
Yeah, I mean, habitation station started giving ideas. I mean, Habitation Station had its own problems, but it started giving ideas of how gold bases should be used. They shouldn't just be placed in the center of the map, where if you control the center of the map because you're already winning, you get the golds. A lot of map makers refer to those as winner golds, essentially, because, you know, they secure your win. You already have map control, you take the golds, you're ahead. You're staying ahead. Whereas a lot of older versions of like Blizzard maps, like Colas Ravine is a really good example. It was a bad map altogether, but it had side gold bases like on the left and right side of the map, and it
the Colossus Wars.
It had gold bases that weren't winter golds, for example. Whereas every other Blizzard map since then has had them, and then more recently, a couple ladder maps have had them. Like Planet S had them. Like Expedition Lost had them. So I think having side gold bases is better than having, or like gold bases along the main attack path, like Habitation Station had, is the best way of doing that.
I actually think it might be interesting, just as an experiment at some point, probably not on a ladder map, because frankly I would not want to subject everyone to that all the time, but as an experiment for a tournament, maybe a Shoutcraft or something, having the main have gold patches, just to see what
they
impact
that
has on gameplay.
I think Red City.
I think they did half and half, if I remember correctly.
I have done this quite a bit of times before.
It kind of breaks for the same reason as Zerg getting an early gold base period. Just kind of
right because
it,
the three great bases don't benefit the same from minerals. Income. Terran, right. So the main problem with gold bases as a notion, as far as I see it, and feel free to disagree if you want, but it's that, firstly, minerals are not of equal value to all three races in the same way. To a Terran player playing bio, minerals are significantly more valuable than they are to Protoss. And to a Zerg player, early mineral income means a much much greater acceleration of economy growth, so that they hit their later, so that they hit their max army supply much, much faster. They can take extra bases quicker, and Zerg is capable of defending it because of the way the larva mechanic works, if that were to happen. But Protoss doesn't have the same sort of explosive growth that Zerg has, and their units don't benefit, their mineral dump units, except maybe the Adept now. We'll have to see how that plays out with the Adept and Legacy of the Void. But Zealots, for example, were not as useful as huge swells of Lings, and you couldn't get them as quickly because you couldn't really increase your probe production that much. It didn't really speed things up just to get some extra minerals early. You could hit the timing while doing stuff, but it wasn't quite as powerful. And the different races had had differing abilities to defend a gold base. Protoss typically had the hardest time actually holding one if they managed to take one. So in that sense, the very notion itself of a gold base was inherently imbalanced, asymmetrically speaking, which could be made up for by other map features. I could imagine Blink being strong on a map because of the cliff design, but if you gave both players a free gold base, maybe it would maybe Blink would wind up not being too strong just by virtue of the opponent having enough stuff to defend. Like, there are a variety of things I could hypothetically see balancing that out in map design. Would you agree or disagree with that notion?
I could see stuff like that happening if it was enough. I mean, Blink is obviously for PVT, but against Zerg, Protoss would need something against Zerg, and Blink hasn't been the most popular against Zerg. So, like, mass speedlings with the Hydralisk buffs, you know, Hydras are coming more common as well earlier on. So you would need more features like that, maybe backdoors, really good pylon spots, proxy spots, maybe cannon rushing, allowing you to cannon rush the gold bases or something. But, I mean, every race would have to have that kind of opportunity, and that's really hard to do in a map, to give every race the equal opportunity when something is clearly favoring, like counteracting like that. So
Right, of course. Some other features, for example. Lately, you've seen some prevalence of backdoors in map design more frequently.
Yep.
What sort of impact do you think that's had? Cantuva and Time Twister, of course.
Okay, yeah, he can go first. That's fine.
No, you go.
Okay, backdoors are tricky because, like, a lot of mapmakers, they want to do different things with the first three bases because the first three bases are what outline the game in general. So every single game, if the starting of the game is the same, then the games are generally going to look the same into the mid game, into the late game, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's kind of like why every map plays very similar in a way. So backdoors were kind of meant to mix that up by allowing, like, all-ins, some multi-pronged attacks other than just drops. So Zerg can now do multi-pronged attacks on the main and third as well. And it also kind of makes flying units like Mutas scary because they can whittle down the rocks, fly away, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they just allow more aggressive options, and the community didn't really like that very much. So, don't know if backdoors will be making an emergence again, but
no. In this case, it's exactly because what I had said before about the not being able to use other than standard HP rocks. For example, if you had 10,000 HP rocks, this wouldn't be a problem. Come on. Because the issues at the moment is because mostly the rocks are abused in timing pushes. And because a timing push in itself can be pretty frustrating for the players, the fact that adding the rocks is, like, even worse. Most of the problems, in my opinion, that we are seeing from maps, things like three base caps, even three base caps, as I said, can be altered or can be improved by allowing map makers to use different non-standardized setups, such as the bases. For example, you said
Just a second. You're referring to Baron's FRB, fewer resources per base, economy modification.
Not necessarily.
Just making modifications. Yeah. I mean, if you had different kinds of rocks, like it would help. I mean, imagine putting rocks on bases.
Yeah.
With Duventop having, you know, rocks on bases are ridiculously strong against Zerg. Like Zerg hates that. But if you had weaker rocks, if you had 1,000 HP and they only had like one armor instead of, you know, it's standard stats, then Zerg might be able to deal with that a lot better, and that would allow for difference in early game plays. Like Zerg wouldn't be able to rush the third. They'd still get a normal third, but they wouldn't be able to rush it. So that kind of alleviates that. While at the same time, the other races can still kind of do their same stuff. So it having stricter regulations on like rocks and stuff, it hurts. In some ways, it kind of makes everything. Yeah, it's no fun.
So I have a question. Now while we're talking about the aggressive and community not really liking it, I have a question for Chris.
Okay.
I want to know his opinion on this. So something I've noticed is that a lot of people in the community have an idea, or it's kind of almost universal at this point, but have this notion of how the game should be played, perhaps. And they want to be able to play the game that way on every single map, regardless of what features it has. And they really don't like to be required to change up the way they play for different map styles. Mm-hmm. So while there's certainly some balance elements, those balance elements could be corrected without too much difficulty if Blizzard were interested in doing it. But, I mean, take for example the notion that Protoss has a very tough time expanding with a backdoor and Zerg aggression. It should be possible to balance that out a little bit if there was interest in doing so, to allow for that. But it seems people in general are not really willing to experiment or interested in experimenting in order to figure out, you know, aggressive timings or strategies or, like, pressure builds to allow them to expand behind it, necessarily. Right. Is that an attitude that you think is common and thereby somewhat restricts map design as well?
I think, first of all, it's very frustrating to spend, you know, StarCraft II is a very, very difficult game. So it's frustrating to spend hours and hours and hours working on a build or a strategy. Like, when I first started, I spent so many hours just learning how to forge fast expand and getting timings down perfectly and being able to fend against any counter timings and things like that. So it hurts to practice a bunch of timings and then be told, well, you can't do that anymore, you gotta come up with a new strategy. At the same time, it is good because it forces people to grow. But the harshness of having to change up that drastically to say, oh, well, I just can't forge fast expand anymore. I have to learn the gateway expand now from now on. Like, all of my old strategies are no longer viable on this map. It's frustrating. And to some degree, people do kind of have Idra problems where they, like, you know, the game has to be played this way perfectly. If you don't play it this way, then you're bad. You're awful at this game. And I think that's kind of a result of the fact that we spend so much time trying to perfect these small builds and things and trying to make everything perfect. And so when we get hit with surprises or non-standard map features, it's a little bit more difficult to adapt to it.
Right. I have a question. Did anyone here see the game between Goop? Yeah, go ahead.
I think
you were quiet, so I couldn't hear you.
Oh god. More or less.
Sorry, my mic is really special.
All right. Yeah, just speak loudly.
Okay. I can't because I'm sick and I don't have my voice.
Okay. All right.
From when people started, and this maybe like lots of people in Institute didn't play River, so when they came into Team Liquid or whatever, they started reading guides about how you should only have one build per matchup if you want to improve, and you have to focus on macro and shit like that.
Right.
And it was very much taken out of context in the sense that people ended up focusing more on improving than having fun, if that makes any sense. And when you first start and you're kind of going up in the ladder and you go from bronze to silver to gold, whatever, it is fun. But if you ever hit a plateau, it's extremely frustrating and it ends up distorting your view of the game in a way. Because you end up deciding that the only way to play is a certain way, you go full Aatrox, etc., etc. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people get very competitive and lose interest in having fun. That's true.
Yeah.
Did anyone hear? It's
not being very competitive, because the most fun I had in SC2 was when I was the most competitive in it. It's when you are very competitive, you hit a plateau, and you look for things to blame that are outside of what simply maybe you're just not that good at StarCraft because it's really hard.
Or perhaps you just aren't thinking about it the right way in not improving.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking about it. Yeah, I can understand that. So did anyone here see a while back the games? I'm trying to remember the name of the map. I believe it was a GSL game on the map called Maze. And I don't know if anybody remembers that map at the GSL. It was a while back.
At Bomb Makers. We remember every single map that we have ever seen.
I don't know what you guys thought about.
I've never asked map makers of your caliber what people thought about Maze. So I'm definitely going to ask that in just a second here. But does anyone remember a game between Gumiho and Zest? I believe it was the game in which Gumiho's head got smashed by the computer in front of him. If I remember correctly, in the middle of the match, in the booth. He destroyed Zest on Maze with a biomech timing push that abused the positioning and setup of the rocks in order to basically siege tank him to death. And I think that speaks very well to variety of maps, that sort of thing can happen on newer maps. And I don't necessarily think that build was imbalanced on that map because, well, not necessarily. It might have been. Who knows? But because we didn't see that map enough and didn't see enough games on that map to really form an opinion on that sense.
One thing, that's like exactly the issue. Because I hope that it was imbalanced, because imbalance is what fuels the metagame. It fuels the advance of the metagame in this case, especially with maps. We, all the time where you are designing a map, the first thing that you are seeing is what strategies could ever be imbalanced in this map. And from that on, you start moving forward and trying to or foment some other non-standard strategies, or trying to bring down the level of imbalance in, they say, imbalanced strategies in the map. I really don't know how to else say it, but...
Okay, I think I understand what you're trying to... Yeah, I think I understand what you're trying to say. I'd just be careful to differentiate between perceived imbalance and actual imbalance. When I use the word imbalance, I'm usually referring to a strategy that legitimately is, has too high a win rate and cannot be stopped reliably. I don't mean something that it just happens to be strong on the map and requires adjustments.
No, that's the thing, because you need to also account for the time frame the map will be played. For example, with Maze, if you played Maze nowadays and it had been played for the last 2 years, the map would probably be broken. But because it was played in a relatively short time frame, the map never ended having strategies that were considered very imbalanced in the map. That's one thing that you need to also take account. The time frame you are expecting your map to be played, for example, is the hardest thing, because non-standard maps tend to get imbalanced much, much faster than standard maps. For example, Time Twister or me or any other map maker that has experience can make incredibly easily make standard maps that last years without being imbalanced. For example, any neon theme could make a new overgrowth easily in like half an hour, and the map would be played standardly from at least 2 years easily. The issue happens when you are trying to create non-standard maps that are balanced in the long term. That is the problem. that is where that's the fun part. That is the challenge, at least for me.
Well, that's certainly a challenge, and it's certainly above my pay grade to actually pull that one off. so, but yeah, the point I wanted to make is that that game really stuck out in my mind, and not just because Gumiho got hit in the head and went into boss mode and said, screw this, I'm murdering this nerd right here, and then just destroyed Zest, the best Protoss player in the world, on that map with that Trinity, but also because he did it with such a unique strategy that you don't see pretty much anywhere else. Ever, really. You don't typically see people going bio tank against Protoss at all.
I think that those kind of moments are why I think maps need to be less standard. Because if it's on ladder for 3 months, people are gonna figure it out and it's gonna be broken relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But if it provides moments like that, then it's almost worth it. Because you see some really unique strats from almost every race until the map is figured out. So having some broken maps here and there might be okay, as long as it's not the majority of the map pool. But then we get into issues of it, the so-called imbalanced or creative map being vetoed every game. So
I think
it's okay in tournaments.
On the format of a tournament, I think the best place to have ridiculously stupid imbalanced maps is Pro League. Pro League is amazing.
Yes,
exactly what he said.
Yes.
And I'm actually very sad that they stopped. They used to have like one or two random crazy maps. I'm kind of sad that they were going more towards standard maps lately.
Yeah,
like they used to have Arkanoid in there. Arkanoid of all maps. I remember one game, one PvP, when like in the second round, people actually figured that you could be Protoss on that map. When some guy was going Nexus first into double Stargate, and Jank before gated, and he found his opponent last, but he still won. Because the other guy was going Nexus first into double Stargate Phoenix, so...
Good times.
That was a great game.
Ultra late 4-gate for the win! But,
Yeah.
No, I mean, like... Pro League is the perfect format to experiment with a lot of fun maps. I think, as a general rule of thumb, if players are allowed to veto... If players have vetoes, okay? And for maps in the map pool... You are perfectly able to put, or you know, the format is such that allows you to choose which player of which race goes on which map. It's perfectly okay to have maps that have weird features that make one matchup perhaps imbalanced, but you know, make other maps perhaps, or other matchups perhaps are just different. TVZ, for example, there are features that can make TVZ very imbalanced. A lot of high ground and a lot of chokes makes mech very, very powerful. And, like, a lot of airspace can make Mutalisks very, very strong. And there are a variety of other features. But TVZ, for example, tends to be a bit more balanced and less affected by terrain features than the Protoss matchups are. I can fairly easily foresee a map being made, and I'm sure there are examples of this, I just can't think of any off the top of my head, where TVZ is not made imbalanced by the map but plays out differently than it ordinarily would. Whereas the Protoss matchups are just completely impossible to play. Maybe like a wide open natural, because Terran doesn't really have too much difficulty dealing with that in the same way that Protoss does. I mean, Terran doesn't have necessarily like the easiest time of it, but it's not as bad. Because of the way bunkers work.
I really don't know. It's a nice challenge. I haven't thought of this.
It's not something you could do on the ladder very... It's not something that, you know, you could very easily do on Blizzard's ladder necessarily,
That's also the thing, because the WS map pool is used in tournaments, and also the ladder, it means that any map that you want to make for tournament play, like, for example, I did Foxtrot especially for tournament play, and fuck everybody else.
can I just say how much I love Shoutcraft because of the weird maps?
Yep. Yeah.
Shoutcraft was great for weird maps. Although, they went a little too weird, I think. But, you know, why not,
Total
right?
Total Biscuit told us to especially fuck everybody, make the maps as fun as possible for the viewer. And we did. We did that. Fuck everybody, fuck the pros. If they want the money, they have to play them. That's exactly what he said. And that's what we did, and we delivered. we created the funkiest maps possible. Even though we had issues trying to come up with ideas for the maps, and everybody in our little Skype group was throwing ideas around. Oh no, we have already done this. For example, we had that 2v2 player maps that had acid that rises up, and we had a huge discussion if this map was too of much of a copycat of Neopolalis Rhapsody that was the lava map that won Team Liquid Map Contest 3.
Man, that map was horrible.
Does that remind you of anything, Chris?
Oh, shut up. Don't even want to hear it.
But I remember a while back there was, I can't remember the name of the event. I think it was a Red Bull event, but I could be wrong about that. A Day 9 was hosting it. And it featured 2v2s, and then it was a 2v2 tournament, and there were these really weird maps where Day 9 was able to just do random shit whenever he wanted, and yeah. the voters were deciding what was going to happen on the map, and it was things like he had a button that would cause nukes to fall everywhere on the map at random, and spawn uber demons in the middle of the map that would just go on rampages. And all sorts of other nonsensical things. And I remember he actually got mad at one point because Noni was dodging all of the nukes during, like, the giant hellfire blasts. He actually just started spamming Noni with nukes, and Noni kept dodging them. Like, he just, like, started, like, just, like, casually throwing nukes specifically at Noni. And Noni kept dodging him, and Noni walked out of there going, haha, I'm the gingerbread Protoss, you can't catch me. And that tournament was the silliest maps in the silliest rules possible, and I had so much fun watching it just because of the variety factor.
Exactly. It was the thing is that the thing I added a link to the chat. The thing is that many people don't really understand how crazy a map can really get. It they can get absolutely insane, and they will be tons of fun for anyone that's watching the game because it's so unstandard, so weird, that anything can happen. And that's one of the fun things that Selnaga did with the Trial of the Selnaga, the Day 9 did with the Trial of the Selnaga, that it was, we have these tools for entertain, not really for a competition. That's the difference. You need to see the maps from an entertaining point, from a player perspective, and from a competition point of view, the standard maps will be always the best. The thing is that StarCraft 2 is also an esport, so you need to keep people entertained.
People don't remember is, as a player, as Protoss especially, unless a map is completely ridiculous and bad, like Daedalus Point, if you give me 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent, I guarantee I can come up with a build that's going to kill somebody. So if it's like a weekend tournament where you're going to play a million people in a weekend and you can choose maps and veto them, I'll just won't bother. But if I'm playing for a GSL or a Clan War or whatever, and I know I'm being sent on a map, I can prepare builds and account for things, so the format of a tournament is really important as well. So, for example, in WCS, where players actually pick the map pool just before the match starts, you always only see standard maps. If in WCS we had maps assigned, however, a month, 2 weeks, whatever, before the match, I think maps could be more non-standard and more interesting.
There's also All right, well, first of all, you are also the walk master, so we got to remember that here. That's a great point in general. You can, if you know you're going out on a specific map. I mean, it's formatting. If you know you're going to be out on a specific map, you can prepare a build against the opponent you expect to be playing against, and you'll do fine even if the map is imbalanced because you'll know you'll have a plan.
Yep.
And if you don't have that format, as long as you have vetoes for the one or two maps that are almost impossible for your specific race to play, it should be okay in general.
You should have seen the builds I used to prepare for Clan Wars. They were the most glorious thing.
I had some silly ones too.
There was this Yeah, okay, let's not derail the discussion.
Let's not derail it too much. I knew where you were about to go.
It was amazing.
And we were about to, no, there was sorry. About to be a lot of cursing about Hellions on my part, and there was going to be a bunch of other stuff, but let's jump back into something else. So why don't we talk a bit more about map features and some of the and how they can influence balance and other design. And of course, the aesthetics of maps. So actually, yeah, I think the aesthetics are a good thing to talk about here. One of the things I noticed the most was when Cloud Kingdom came out for the first time. It was played in tournaments. It had a space shark.
Yeah.
Okay, right in the middle of the map. And everybody loved the space shark. Everybody. Nobody complained about the space shark being there. All right, everyone was watching that. Like, the casters were all over the space shark. The viewers loved the space shark. When there was a battle going on, the space shark was like floating around hunting for blood. Like, it was the space shark was great. Then the map came to ladder and the space shark was gone.
That's
Blizzard
Blizzard
removed
that's,
the space shark.
No, that you can blame Blizzard for that. But Time Twister, who came with the space shark? Do you know? You were in ESB at
Neo,
the time.
Yeah, Neo Bowman. He was an old map maker. He came over from Brood War, but he came up with the idea of just putting a space shark on every single one of his own maps. And then everyone else just kind of picked it up, and you know, Super Owlman just threw it on Cloud Kingdom as kind of a joke and a tribute to the space shark idea. And then from there, it just kind of blew. It was on Hana originally too, actually.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Thank you very much for telling me who deserves credit for that idea, because they're a genius, and everybody should know who came up with that idea. But I want to just discuss how important aesthetics are on maps, because I mean, you can take a very well balanced, well designed map with almost no aesthetics, and no one's going to want to play on it. It'll just be boring. It'll look bland and useless and uninteresting for both the players and the viewers. And Blizzard does have a lot of tech requirements for their maps. They have to be fairly low-key up for ladder, because Blizzard has a requirement that people with low-end machines have to be able to play the map without problem.
Right.
So a lot of the times when maps become Blizzard maps, they lose a lot of the aesthetics.
Right.
But...
like... Blizzard's kind of, I mean, map makers kind of have a thing against Blizzard, because a lot of map makers will make their maps really beautiful and pretty, and then it'll get to Blizzard or Blizzard's Q&A, and it'll get on ladder, and it'll look almost entirely different. Frost kind of had a bit of a changing. Terraform most recently had some changing. Echo even had its changes. I mean, they're mostly performance issues associated with it, and for the most part, it's okay. Like, if that would ever happen to one of my maps, I would have been fine with it. Then there's just more questionable, like, they changed the texturing, or they actually completely redid some parts of it. I mean, they try not to. They've come out and said they try not to, so it's usually bugs or performance or clarity.
Right.
Clarity is a big one, too.
How important...
Every time that we have a map maker make the ladder, we need to calm him down and explain him that Blizzard will probably make some changes. And every time someone freaks out for the map, the Team Liquid map contest time 4, it was me, the one who freaked out because Foxtrot, and by the TLMC5 where Echo made it. I was already prepared, knowing that changes will be made. But that time, it was the turn of Ferrisi, the creator of Cactus Valley, to freak out because Blizzard touched, and it changed the size of every single cactus in the map, and he had made every single cactus a different size with a different flower set up. And he got like really.
Oh, the poor guy! All that work.
How many cactus are there in Cactus Valley?
Thousands,
like at least.
Thousands.
Yeah, and every single flower was placed manually for every single cactus. So you understand the amount of work
flowers.
That went into that.
Yeah, you had floating flowers because they like reduced the size of the cactus, but they left the flowers alone, so you actually just have floating flowers all over the map.
What?
And it looks, I mean, if you like zoom in and you kind of like look at some of the cactus, like there's these little red floating flowers everywhere, and that's from them making the cactuses smaller and leaving them alone. Blizzard's kind of made mistakes like that too. Like when they made the change to Daybreak, the half base to full base in the middle there, we put, or the GSL mapmakers put a green glow light on the gas to signify that it was a high yield gas when the half base was there. But when they changed the base, they left the light there. So there was just like a random green glowing spot by that base on Daybreak for the longest of time. I mean, things like that just get overlooked all the time. So
Blizzard's best mistake is still calling. I think it was Deadwing. They called it Seromus.
Wait. Terraform, check the creator of Terraform. It will say Anik. The creator of Terraform is not Anik. It's negative zero. To this day, they haven't changed yet the name of the creator, and is the name of the creator is someone else. Negative Zero told Scion, but they say that they were going to change it, and it never happened. So,
I think they fixed it by now.
They might have fixed it.
I think they did fix it recently. But
when the last time I saw it in Legacy of the Void, like yesterday, it was still saying Anik.
Maybe Legacy.
Oh, I didn't look at Legacy. Maybe Legacy. They still have it wrong. I think they fixed it elsewhere. I've been pestered by someone to ask a question right now. Can either of you make a nice beach map?
I made a beach map for one of the contests a little while ago. I basically just took the Ohana tile set and just threw it on there. But a lot of people, I don't know.
Yeah, like I have a bunch, like at least some like 20 something other maps that I have never published nor finished, and there are a couple beach maps there. In SMA, the StarCraft Mapmaking Association, we have ICL, ESIL, and he has this incredibly pretty map, Neoporta Nuova, which had a huge drama going on, because maybe Time Twister wants to continue the huge drama with Neoporta Nuova.
Oh, the
beach map. Yeah. I mean, beach maps just kind of... Everyone loves beach maps, so it doesn't really... Like, when it comes to the public, aesthetics kind of play a big role in how people like it. So if it's a really pretty map, or it looks different than all other maps currently on ladder or other maps it's being compared to, it's generally going to be favored publicly. And that's kind of unfortunate for the map maker, because we didn't know ahead of time of like what the maps was going to be compared to in like map contests, for example. So
yeah, I think that was a big part of the reason that the map in TLMC5 or I can't remember, I think it was 5-1. The what was the name of the map?
Cycle Jerk Biome. That was cool name of the map.
Biome, yeah.
Biome. Biome.
I was 4.
Or four. It was four. Okay. Sorry, four. It was. Yeah. It was a long time ago. The point. I remember the recent biome winning was because it just looked so different than everything else.
It was cool, man. It was a five person map.
I mean, the map didn't play very well.
It was neat.
But it was really cool looking.
Terraform's kind of another thing like that. It was by far the prettiest map of the last contest.
Yeah.
My map was prettier. Come on.
Yeah, well,
come on.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, like Foxtrot's another winner that looked really cool. Cloud Kingdom's another one with Ohana as well, another bleach map. Frost did really well because it was a snow map at the time. So, I mean, a lot of...
I voted
team
Frost
played.
Because I loved it. Like, the instant best map ever.
Yeah, it was both. It was a really great map, and it had snow on it, so even the general, just casual players that played ladder liked it because it had snow on it. So it did really well. So I think aesthetics also play the part clarity, too. I mean, how many times on, like, dark maps, when you're playing on dark maps, you're like, okay, where's the mains at? You know, you can't really see them, especially when the Fog of War's there. So clarity is important, too.
Especially when you have shaders in a city turned to the minimum settings. Like on Cloud Kingdom, I couldn't see force fields with that setting, so I kept my settings there up. Yeah. because they were dark purple, and on Cloud Kingdom is dark purple, so I couldn't see shit. Other players can, I couldn't, so I played with higher settings.
I changed my settings to hybrid after the whole business with Foxtrot Labs and the Lightning, because I based on like for 50 people, and I tested with like 50 people, you know what I'm saying, to see if the map had any issue with the aesthetics alone. And everyone told me it's fine. It is a little bit glowy, but nothing else. It's fine. Send it on.
And I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, at the start it caught me completely off guard, because the lightning that I used is a standard lightning for the editor. It has been used in the campaigns and such. So I obviously thought instead of going and making my own lightning custom made, I used the standard one because I thought that there will be no issues here. And yeah, you need to be very careful with lightning, and that's
Dash
something that
too.
That's
Dash
yeah.
And same.
Yep.
Dash and Terminal had really bad,
oh god,
like, bright,
oh god,
yellow saturated lighting. Like you would just look at it, and your eyes would hurt for like 5 seconds. Especially if you're a Protoss and you had like the bright yellow Nexus right in front of you, it was terrible. And it didn't really get changed until it made it to ladder. I think Blizzard did a good job of correcting that lighting there.
The first time I play tested, I felt like my eyes were about to bleed.
Yes.
Terry, did you ever try playing...
I had that issue too.
Did anyone here try playing Color Crusher? I think that was the name of the map.
I never
what talking about. But
By Sidian. It's a four-player map with everything...
Yeah.
Four sections colored with different colors.
Right, each quarter was different. I tried playing on that map once, and my eyes just wanted to like explode out of my sockets. And it might have been a lighting issue.
That's exaggerating.
Lighting.
Come on.
I had
quite a bit of game time there.
No, you gotta understand.
Was
it was
fine.
It was because of my set. It was because of my settings. It wasn't the fault of the map maker necessarily. It was because of the settings I had set on.
Yeah, like that's the thing. We need to. After the whole business with Foxtrot, I started messing around every time that now I'm testing the map. I go and test every single changing every single setting in the game, restarting the game, and playing it again with different settings, because that way it won't happen to me ever again. And the only way is spending like 4 hours testing solamente only the lightning. It is annoying, but
you have to do extensive testing unless you use a standard tile set. If you use a standard tile set that even Blizzard uses, then it's fine. But otherwise, you have to test it, because it might look great on high settings, but then it might be completely unreadable on like low settings. Mm-hmm. So.
And let me just go out of my way to say that I have a very good machine and have gone into the maps for TLMC when they're first released in all of their aesthetic glory, and some of them with like ridiculous amounts of details on the highest possible settings have gone in and just gone, oh my god, this map is spectacularly gorgeous. Holy shit, I want to play everything on this map. I've seen maps like that. I'm just like, I just never wanted to stop playing that map. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so pretty. And then it gets to Blizzard and it's done, and I'm like, you can't even recognize the map anymore. Foxtrot was a good example of a map I went into. I'm like, oh my god, this map is beautiful!
Foxtrot was amazing.
Well, hopefully with Legacy of the Void, they'll up the requirements a little bit of the game, so that way they can, maps can be a little prettier and stuff. You know? I mean, because they did that with Heart of the Swarm. They increased, like, the texture quality or something a while ago.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So they have, like, even low settings looked a little better, and so they kind of
and the physics engine,
bit.
Too.
Yeah, they had the physics engine going on, too, so... If they do any changes like that with Legacy, that could help maybe change that, because technology keeps going, so, I mean, eventually they should, so.
All right, so, some more, I think we've covered aesthetics pretty well. In conclusion, aesthetics are awesome and important.
One thing.
Go ahead.
One last thing. Don't be so mean with Lisa. they do their best. They do their best, I know.
Oh, no,
I'm
not blaming them. I fully understand their position. I'm just really sad that I can't play ridiculously gorgeous maps on ladder because other people have lousy computers. I don't blame Blizzard. I blame people for not having amazing computers. It's their fault. Okay.
I don't have the best computer. As you can see, I don't have the best camera either. So you need to deal with me. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I think we can manage. So let's discuss some more map features and their impact on balance and the way gameplay goes. Because I think we all agree aesthetics are important, and they're extremely important for both the viewers and the players. So we talked about the impact that the base setup has on gameplay a bit. The notion of like having the regular standard mineral patches and whatnot, and the effect of destructible rocks a little bit. How about things like high ground?
High ground. I mean, me and Katana could go on and on about high ground, because there's so many discussions about high ground. I mean, Nimbus, when it was going through the Team Liquid map contest, there was a lot of discussion about Nimbus having really strong high ground forts. That was really, really strong.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a surprise for a lot of map makers, because a lot of map makers don't consider high ground to be that strong. It's not like Brood War, where you could stick a high ground pod in the middle of the map, and it was like an untouchable spot because of the high ground advantage that was coded into the game itself. And StarCraft 2 doesn't have that. So a lot of map makers just consider high ground to be weak. But when it comes down to it, since StarCraft is such like a small difference makes a big difference kind of game, high ground does play a big difference in the game. So it makes mech very strong, swarm host, it used to make swarm host very strong. Any kind of three base play, like if you put the third on a high ground and they have to go up to a ramp, like on Cloud Kingdom, for example, that helps a lot in defending that third. And I mean, you can go on and on about how high ground helps, but at the same time, it doesn't really diversify enough to really make maps all that different from one another. So if you have like, if you took like Shakura's Plateau or any other map that had its natural with a ramp, and then you just made it a flat choke, it wouldn't change all that much, except for maybe a couple early game all-ins. And even then, it wouldn't be the biggest of difference. So,
but
what about using high ground in different ways, like putting a high ground place that you could drop on or something behind a third base?
Well, that has a lot of balance issues. In Legacy of the Void, I'm really hoping we can do that more, because Zerg will actually have Ravagers, which will be able to target high ground spots. So if you put a little like high ground pod behind a third base, for example, they'll be able to drop their little bombs on the high ground third, be able to deal with it. They won't have to go mutas, and they won't. I mean, Infestors never really came into effect in Heart of the Swarm like they did in Legacy of the Void, and those were the kind of counters. But Ravagers are kind of early game, so that helps. Protoss has, the Photon Overcharge, Mothership Core to help see a high ground, absolutely.
Colossus.
And then Terran has tank drops, so I mean.
Nobody builds Colossus in Legacy of the Void, let's be honest here.
That's true. Okay, fair enough.
One of the events that rings most clearly in my mind from back in the early days of Wings of Liberty was when Boxer was playing, and there was a game on Tal'Darim Altar against a Zerg player, one of the earlier versions of the map, where there was this little pillar in between the natural and the main, which was just enough to drop a single marine on it, and you couldn't fit more than one. And he dropped a marine there and started killing drones. And the Zerg didn't have any overlords nearby because he didn't expect that. So he had to start making overlords just to get vision. And so his queen could kill it and could deal with the medevac. And the medevac was healing the marines, so the marine was just like killing queens. And every time like the marine started dying, he would just pick the marine up and drop a different marine. And everybody's mind was like completely blown. Yeah, it was such a boss.
Cool. I think that kind of stuff is cool, but it's like minor. And in your general casual ladder game, it won't have that much of an impact. But also, once people know about it, it's basically done for. You know, that Zerg's like, oh, I know about this. Yeah. Just throw a spine crawler at my natural. I'll make sure to put it here. And so that way it'll be able to reach the high ground. And the Overlord will be there ahead of time. You know, so I think a lot of things like that are kind of minor. But there are things like that that could be done. Like Tal'Darim Altar also had that little gap between the main and the third that could be dropped on. And that was another kind of thing. It wasn't high ground, but it did have things like that.
There was also things like the on Xel'Naga Caverns, when Boxer was playing on it, he would sometimes drop tanks on those like high ground ledges in the middle of the map off to the sides
God,
to protect his pushes. Yep. And And I actually remember him once actually building missile turrets on top of those to protect the tanks from mutalists. And he would just move his army around those ledges. He'd run forward, start poking the hatch, and then he'd just back up into the range of the siege tanks and start trying to chase them. And I think he did that in a game against Idra, in fact. It was like a really well-advertised game. And it's
Chris Plateau had that too.
And it wasn't,
I believe.
And it wasn't a super powerful move. It wasn't like that much stronger than just having the tanks on the low ground, because really, I mean, if the Marines are going to die, then like the tanks aren't doing any more damage by virtue of being on the high ground. And they're not going to, he's not going to try to pick them off with Zerglings anyway. He would use Mutalists for that, so it wouldn't really be any different than having a low ground and putting tanks there and then putting missile turrets on at the tanks on the low ground necessarily. But it was really cool and fun to watch, that sort of thing and that sort of behavior. And it's not the sort of thing we see very much anymore, because I think people are a lot more cognizant of some of the power that high ground can cause for that sort of thing. And also because Mutalisks were buffed so much that tanks just don't show up in the matchup, unless they're playing like pure mech.
Right, I mean, that's another thing with high ground, and I mean, you go on and on about air units with maps, because there are plenty of features that most people don't talk about or really consider, just like the shape of the main base, for example, where the mineral line is placed in the main base. Because if it's like placed in the middle of the main base, then suddenly drops are a lot stronger, because it takes less time for the drop to get to the mineral line, and like blink and stuff like that has less time to react. So it having high ground and also little features have huge impacts with maps, but also at the same time very limiting.
Drops get a little bit weaker as well by the fact that like workers could run away in different directions a little more easily?
Not really. It depends on the positioning of the natural, the third, and the main base. For example, look at Echo. In the third base, the forward third, you can have a drop behind the mineral line, then pick up and drop in the main. Meanwhile, Protoss needs to walk all the way around to deal with the drop. Then Terran picks up again and do this. But that's another issue.
If your mineral line is like in the middle of the main base, then you have other concerns too, like tanks sieging from the edge of the main base and you having to make the main bigger in general. But then,
or putting unpassable terrain on the low ground to prevent the tanks from getting close.
Right, or doodads or something like that. But then you also have the types of drops that are most common. I mean, if it's a Hellion drop, I mean, spreading your workers out is kind of needed anyway. If it's a Widowmine drop, you just have to get away from them, so it doesn't really help. If it's a Bio drop, then it doesn't matter because Bio units are super fast anyway. So, I mean, it depends
on the drop. If it's an Ultralisk drop.
If it's an Ultralisk drop.
If you're playing against cats and it's Ultralisk dropper ass.
Or Kuai
Archon
Rice.
Drops.
Or Kuai Rice. I can absolutely see that. What mechanics or map design features do you do to try to limit the effectiveness of air units, such as the Mutalisk?
There's a lot. He just mentioned, the position of the third in the main is a big one. The size of the main is a big one. The mineral line placement and orientation is kind of a big one. Like, if the mineral lines of the natural third and main are kind of, like, all facing towards each other, that makes Mutalisks bouncing forth very easy. Dead space is
the
big one.
The distance between the edges of the map itself with the
dead space
nexus and mineral
is very, very important. Because if there's a lot of dead space on a map, even if it's, like, pathable, technically, but it's still, like, unused for the most part, it's still very good for air units, I think. King Sage Oxidation had that. Where around the mains, you still had pathable place, but it was good for air units.
Yeah, it also depends, because not every space not every airspace affects air units in the same time. For example, drops will be more stronger in a setup like a King Sejon Station that you said, because they can drop the BO in the low ground, heal up, and pick up and drop again, which as it happened to me many times, and was pretty annoying to deal with. that it really depends in a map-to-map basis. You need to check every single thing in a map-to-map basis. You can't really make big overarching statements about the strength of air units.
Right,
of course.
Make a difference.
Is there a feature you could do? I'm just curious here. What features would you put into place if you wanted to make Mutalisk weaker in engagements in the middle of the map, rather than limiting? Take for example the fact one of the Mutalisks are very strong, not just because they're very powerful harass that heal up quickly, but also because they're useful during the main engagements as well. Would there be a map mechanic or design you could use to allow them to be not to weaken the harass, but to weaken the their engagement potential?
Open areas with zombie showers.
Exactly. No feature at all. Make the area open, and then Mutalisk will not be as strong.
That makes Lings and Banelings stronger that are normally with the Mutalisk. It's hard to balance. That's why Lings and Banelings go so well with Mutalisks, because they balance out each other's weaknesses. It's hard to make maps that counter directly towards one unit unless it's only that unit that can do it. For example, Mutalisks are the only unit that can go from base to base to base over terrain for Zerg. So you can kind of hit Mutalisks there, but once you start hitting Mutalisks elsewhere, you start hitting other units or impacting other units, and that becomes tricky.
Unless, of course, you're doing the Shoutcraft thing and you're just putting high ground with neutral missile turrets on it.
Right. I mean, if you just put missile turrets everywhere, then you're good to go. Right?
I have a quick question.
For the air passing blockers. The air walls.
Oh, yeah. I was about to ask that. So, how unfeasible is putting, random walls in the middle of the map where
they're buggy.
Flying units can't go over?
Unfeasible. Okay. They're very buggy. We've put them on maps before, but you fly, a flock
New Sunshine,
of mutalisks along them, they get
New
stuck.
New Sunshine
sometimes.
Had a map. Do you remember? It was a map jam challenge. Sunshine had made a map that had the walls. It was, imagine a desert oasis, but alongside the edge of the mains, there were these desert walls with air pathing blockers. So you could only pass across a very, very snaky path
specific.
With your air units.
It's hard to do because you have to make it clear that there's air blockers there. Merry-Go-Round did that with the force field shields around the edge of the map kind of thing. But if you stick those giant force field walls in the middle of the map, you're blocking a tremendous amount of player vision of the map. You have to take that in consideration because you have these big floating force fields right in front of the camera, and if there's anything under that ground unit-wise, you can't see it. So there's a lot of problems associated with that.
Yeah, and not only that, but you still have the issues with the lightning and stuff. In the same way that you couldn't see force fields, imagine that you can't see the air pathing blockers. So yeah, it can get very, very problematic very fast.
Well, I guess that's why you guys are the experts to think about these things and why the rest of us don't. Because that sounds like it could be a nightmare trying to figure out solutions to that problem.
I know the solution. Nerf do this.
The map makers can't. The map makers can't.
Take the camera. The camera and move it in a 90-degree angle instead of 57 that it is at the moment. And you make it at a 90-degree angle and you look upside down. And that way you can't use the... How?
I mean, it would make it better for that specific use, but it would make it kind of less better for other uses, if that makes sense. Depth of field determining heights. Imagine trying to see high ground versus low ground if you're looking directly above. It gets tricky.
We could still use the textures. Other than that, it would be a mess. It would be an absolute mess. You're right in that. But we could still find some ways around to try to make it kind of work. I don't know if it can work.
Not something
we can
do.
Try at least.
Clearly, we just need permanent neutral
I'm not
size
doing
storms.
It, though.
Roaming around the middle of the map.
You guys laugh, but Brood War had stuff like that. They had permanent size storms on maps, and it was.
I know they did.
Yeah,
that's why I'm referencing it.
That was fun.
And there is this this map maker that is hated by everyone. That's called Cisco's GoT in Team Liquid. That he has maps that have neutral size zones and neutral blinding clouds and neutral areas where your units slow down and stuff like that. And he does it only for variety. He really enjoys the variety of the game and where you can't have build orders. And he basically randomizes his maps. He adds gold patches in the main bases just because he can, and he plays like that.
I'm actually picturing a map now that has a randomized terrain feature in the middle of the map. Like, the outside of the map is the same every game, but the center of the map is just entirely randomized by some sort of algorithm every time you boot the map up. Like,
I wish the editor supported things like that. That'd be cool.
That'd be cool if it could. What do you guys? Before we get back to this topic, because I'm just curious now, what is your opinion on the StarCraft II map editor?
It's big, clunky, cumbersome, sometimes buggy, but we don't even use 2% of it. So
no, I consider the editor to be the biggest, the best, and the apex of every single tool that Blizzard has ever made.
It's a great tool.
It's really easy to use.
It's really easy to use, but
yeah, that's
knowing
that's
exactly where everything is and how to use it.
As long as you know where X thing is, it is incredibly easy to use and very, very straightforward and fast. The thing is that no one knows where that X thing is, so you need to ask around everywhere. And I mean everywhere. You will Google, you will go and search in Google, and you will use the tools to sort out by date and try to find out the most specific thing possible so you can find why your unit is not working the way it should.
Yeah, because I've seen some of the custom arcade maps people make with that map editor, and some of it is downright ridiculous. Like, I remember playing a good deal of time playing like Photon Cycles, basically playing Tron in the StarCraft II editor. In StarCraft II Arcade. Somebody's making an MMO that remembers like where you used to, like your character level and stuff in the editor. People have made like just some absolutely ridiculous. People have made first person shooters in the editor.
It's an incredibly powerful program. We don't use any of that stuff, as far as I know.
Yeah, my brother that's in the chat made a third person shooter game. And he's working now in some very cool arcade games for the Rock the Cabinet. He made a third-person shooter that it works in the StarCraft II engine and with the editor alone.
Just make a map that has a randomized feature whereby if a skirmish appears in the middle of the map or something at some point in time during the game, just randomly it'll sometimes go into a first-person shooter shoot-off where you have to like micro the unit in first-person mode. Right in the middle of a pro game.
Do you guys know if Blizzard used the editor to make Heroes of the Storm, or is it just the SE2 engine?
It's probably the very similar editor, I'm going to go ahead and say. Yeah, I mean, when I'm watching Heroes of the Storm, it looks... I can kind of tell, like, where things are happening. They're using a lot of different, like, art assets, so you can't tell, like, oh, there's the cliffs and there's the terrain or whatever, but... It's probably the same editor. I'm going to go ahead and guess. Or a very similar editor with just a lot of art assets imported into it to make it look different.
Yeah, the chiseled rocks that they are using in Heroes are the same that we have in StarCraft 2. You know the chiseled rocks, right?
Stuff in it.
Yeah.
I mean...
Actually, I extracted all the textures from Heroes of the Storm, and now I'm sitting in all the textures of the terrain, and I'm making maps with them, and they look pretty nice, and I'm going to release them soon. Yeah, I'm going to send them.
Make Heroes of the Storm maps in StarCraft, because it's the same engine, so you can just take like doodads and stuff from there and import them into StarCraft quite easily.
That's so cool.
Awesome.
That's actually really cool. I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see what you guys do with that stuff. So back to the features, of course. What features do you think are criminally underused in map making that you wish you could see more of?
The rocks.
Or perhaps misused. Like, the feature is used reasonably often, but it's always used in a way that you cringe.
Backdoors.
Yeah, backdoors. Easily.
Because the last Team Liquid Map contest saw a lot of backdoors. And backdoors in general have been popular, even on, like, before that was like Expedition Lost, et cetera, et cetera. And every single backdoor just kind of sort of doesn't work, except for King Sejong Station, which actually had working backdoors. Of course, it was the natural instead of the main. But it worked. The ideas behind that backdoor were better.
I think it worked on Heavy Rain as well. The problem with Heavy Rain was the blink all ends.
Heavy Rain? I don't think Heavy Rain had backdoors.
Didn't have a backdoor.
I recall it having a backdoor, but you had to go through like two sets of rocks to get to it.
It might have been. There was a GSL map.
It wasn't Heavy Rain. What was the name of the map? Yeah, that was it. I had the wrong map name. I'm sorry. Anaconda.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I am not the map making guru here. That is your job, and I deliberately let you have that so you could correct me to prove how much of a genius you are in comparison. But
yeah.
No,
Anaconda had
I just didn't remember the name. But
Anaconda had a weird backdoor, but from what I could tell, games did not look standard on that map at all. So I don't think it was actually successful.
It wasn't a very standard map, and there was a lot of other issues with the map, but I don't think the back door was done wrong on Anaconda. I think that one worked okay, simply because you had to go through two sets of rocks.
There's a lot of maps like that where, like, one feature that's really, really cool is on the map, and the feature itself works, but for some other reasons the map doesn't work, and so everyone hates that map, and it kind of, and the unique feature that was on that map gets linked with how bad that map was. Like gold bases on Zelnaga Caverns for the longest time. You just couldn't put gold bases at all because of Zelnaga Caverns. Back doors because of Blistering Sands. That's why we didn't see back doors really at all during Wings of Liberty. I mean, you could go on and on about one map kind of ruining an entire feature for so many other maps. I think Expedition Lost almost in a way has a part of why the community doesn't like back door rocks. Of course, there's a lot of balance issues.
No, but it's still them too. But still Expedition Lost. Wasn't that bad.
Base naturals,
like, at all. It was pretty nice.
So.
No, Crevasse was very nice. It worked pretty nicely.
Yeah, but it wasn't balanced.
Crevasse was only a GSL map, too. So we only really got to see really high games.
Chris, you've been quiet for a while. What do you think about that?
I'm curious what you guys think about mineral walls, because that seems to be something that's come up a lot more recently. In the past couple of TMLCs, and I'm wondering what you guys think about mineral walls.
Minerals are awesome, but mules kind of break them. Because if you drop a mule and it drops on the wrong side of the mineral wall, then that sucks
a lot. Problematic.
Could you just manually drop it on the other side and then the mineral patch, you can drop it on the other side. And it takes one extra click and maybe an extra half a second to wait. But you can guarantee it doesn't drop on the wrong side.
Yeah, I mean, you could. And that was kind of like a semi-solution that everyone brought up, but it's still kind of... It's still a problem nonetheless. I mean, new players aren't going to know that right away. So if it makes it the latter, new players aren't going to know that. They might not even think of that, and they're just going to complain. So...
Yeah, like, this for example, has happened to me. Like, I sometimes... I'm like typing on Reddit, la 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 la. Oh, you are the guy that made Foxtrot. Yeah, fuck you. My mules always get in the other side. Like, fuck you. Fuck that map. So yeah, and the thing about the mineral walls is that I'm not really a fan of the mineral walls as a base, but more as a wall itself. Like, for example, destructible rocks. In this case, for example, Medusa. Do you guys remember that Medusa, the three-player map that had a middle wall and a backdoor entrance with like seven stacked temples, one on top of the other, so you could only enter with once you had the splash damage, and after you mined out the minerals.
At the backdoor.
Yeah.
Destination in Brood War.
There is one map in particular that I'm going to post here that uses mineral walls very, very uniquely. It's an old Wings of Liberty map, but how it worked is they used gold minerals, and he made the mineral values very small.
Oh,
so that
way you have
to get a worker to mine the minerals off the ramp before you could open that ramp. So it basically made a defender's only path. So the attacker couldn't really use it unless they brought workers with them, but even then it would take a while to mine back and forth. And the defender could easily mine away the gold minerals to get to the third base, essentially. So
that's interesting.
Greblev
worked
made
out
it, right?
For the map.
Greblev
made it, yeah. Yep, he made that map.
He made such cool maps, man.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea, and it's pretty awesome. Zerg eggs are another cool idea that can be used kind of in place of mineral walls, because you can actually mineral walk workers through Zerg eggs. So if you make like a wall of Zerg eggs, workers can get through them, and units can't.
Cannon rushes!
Basically.
Oh,
so you can
I
have,
love
like,
that. Yeah.
You can have back doors or like naturals into the main base with egg walls. So workers could go over there, build, whatever, but units wouldn't be able to utilize it. So Zergling rushes or anything like that wouldn't really be able to utilize that feature. And there's some really cool ideas out there like those two that I just mentioned, but aren't allowed on maps because of like Blizzard regulations and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's
that's
cool,
like
I think.
What I was saying about the restrictions nowadays. It's not the game itself, but we are simply not allowed to use many features that will give us a ton of tools to make more interesting layouts. For example, all the Brood War maps that everyone says, oh my god, Brood War maps were so interesting, they had so many features. It's not because we can't use them because of balance, but we can't use them because of Blizzard.
The thing is, the argument, it doesn't work for thing X doesn't work for new players in 2015, in my opinion, doesn't make sense. Because let's be honest, there are not many new players in ST2, and if they are interested... That's it is. It is a hardcore competitive game. You're not getting
it
many players
really...
5 years out of the
keys. And even if you do, let's say with Legacy we get a bunch of new players, right? It's not that difficult for Blizzard to put like a tip window on like each map, like as it's loading or something, that like describes the new feature or like how or like the basic detail of it. Like or for example, like as you're loading up the map on the loading screen, it says this map uses, you know, Zergling eggs as a wall. Your workers can walk through by mineral walking, others can't. Like it's, and if anyone's confused by that after they play it for the first time, they can easily look up online what it means to mineral walk a worker.
Yeah.
Like it's, it wouldn't really be that difficult to correct for that mistake.
As long as the rules aren't like super, super complicated and restricted. The Zerg egg one's kind of fishy because new players might see a Zerg egg and be like, oh my goodness, my opponent is making Zerglings right next to me or something. They might get completely confused by that. But if Blizzard took that idea of the Zerg egg and made their own kind of unit. A good example of them doing this would be neutral depot. Neutral depots between or below ramps in like early tournaments and Wings of Liberty. So that way you couldn't like pile on bottom of main ramps.
Yeah,
Blizzard
they
made their own
rocks.
Unit. Right, they turned them into rocks. So if Blizzard did something with that with like mineral walls where you had mineable rocks essentially or something of that sort. Then
Dustin Browder is just like gushing over the idea right now.
Rocks
right, like,
you can mine!
Oh my god!
Right?
You had rocks that had like little blue crystals in them to indicate that they were mineable rocks. Like that.
Or like
we have already. There are some doodads that can be that have a mining animation. But
right.
Yeah, the thing as you said is not. It's not that the features can be are too knob unfriendly. But that we can really go insane with some of the things that we can do with maps. I don't know if you guys showed the map, the crazy, absolutely insane map that I made, the one with the straight lines that instead of mineral lines that are like concave, are just straight lines. Yeah, we can just go absolutely insane. And I mean, absolutely insane. We can make the game playable. But at the same time, every single map will be different, so you will need to learn every single map, and you will need to count every single mineral line, you will need every single patch, you will need to select it, and count the amount of minerals that it has. That's exactly what Blizzard doesn't want. And it's understandable that they don't want that. No, nobody really wants that. But the thing is that at the moment we are so constricted that we can't really create interesting maps, because interesting maps that are balanced, because we have this 2000 HP rocks.
Can I be honest? I actually do want that. That'd be amazing. I would love that if every map was, like sufficiently complicated and like different from each other, that for, or on occasion with like the occasional, with enough standard maps, I would love that, because it, like, the variety would be so significant. You just like, it's really, it only takes a couple of games with a new map to really figure the, to figure out the nuances of the basic gist. It might take like a lot more to like perfect like how to play on it. It can take a long time to like really figure out the right way to play on a map, but figuring out like the mechanics of like the weird new feature doesn't usually take more than a game or two.
That's the thing,
for the most part, unless it's really complicated and it's done differently in every map. Then it gets a little, then it gets confusing. Yeah. Like, there would need to be standards set. Because if there's, like, minerals, for example, the gold minerals I just pointed out, on this map, if they were, like, 50 minerals, so you had to have, you know, 10 worker trips, and you get used to that, and you're like, okay, so this is mineral, 10 mineral trips, easy peasy, just do timings based on that. But then another map comes in with the same idea, and then it's 100 minerals. That throws you off, because it's the same mechanic, but it's different. So it, I can understand.
So what you're saying is we need, you just need to be, so as you said before, and as we discussed before, aesthetic clarity.
Right. It needs to be,
it needs to be clear by looking at
consistent. Clear and consistent, essentially. So once you learn it once, you learn it for every map from then on that uses that mechanic. And if it was standardized,
I think as long as it's aesthetically clear that there is a difference, it's okay for it to not to be consistent. Imagine if you have a mineral rock like we described earlier, right? And the mineral rock has like mineral nodes on the rock, okay? Imagine like the mineral nodes are green, and that signifies that it has 50 minerals in it, and then it could be blue, and which has 100, and then yellow that has 200. As long as it's aesthetically clear that there's a distinction between each form, I think it's okay for them to not be this consistent.
Yeah, I think that would be fine, but it depends on how many little things you want to add in.
StarCraft II has the potential to be incredibly, incredibly clean in this perspective because we have the minerals. You can make green minerals, you can make red minerals, you can make purple minerals, you can make minerals of all sorts of colors with different amount of minerals in each one, or with different behaviors for each one. And this will be standardized. For example, we in the editor already have regenerative minerals. They are not really used. They are red minerals, and they regenerate over time.
On the right circumstance, at a risky base or something. Although the only problem with those on ladder is it means that like the map will never mine out.
That might be cool though. Imagine if you had a really small map and it only had three bases for every player, which is all you need in StarCraft II, right? You really need three bases. And then there was all those red minerals that regenerated over time. I mean, the map wouldn't mine out, but at the same time, you could have a much smaller map that way, and it could be a lot more aggressive based.
I'm picturing a map that only has one base for each player, but the base is regenerative, so it never rides out. You literally start like 30 feet apart from each other with a small shallow cliff in between each base, and it's just like go.
We had shrinkage. There is this map called Shrinkage that is just two bases in, like, seriously, the smallest map you could ever imagine, where only the screen, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, Shrinkage is the smallest map you can ever make. I suggest everyone to, like, Google Shrinkage StarCraft, and there is the board, a BOD, where some guys playing on it in the last day of beta. It was tons of fun, man. Because as each tank could attack from like your enemy spawning point to your own nexus or hatchery. It was tons of fun.
Cool. All right. So why don't we're going quite long. So let's try not to go for another 3 hours here. as much as I would like to, but I'm not sure Teo, who is sick, would be able to put up with it, among other things. So I have a question I want to ask. So why don't we go around and say what our favorite instance of a map feature ever uses, like a specific feature, and our favorite implementation of it. Time Twister. But it's like the most like mind-blowing mind feature usage map feature usage you've ever seen. Or your favorite, or whatever criteria.
I mean,
my
favorite is how Cloud Kingdom used rocks and the watchtowers in combination. That's two features, but it was kind of one of the first maps that kind of had like a super skinny direct attack path to your opponent, where you had like wider attack paths on the outside, but at the same time you could eventually open up those like middle skinny paths. So it was really cool.
That feature's become pretty common after that map.
Yes, it became super common after that map. So
all right,
that I thought that was really, really awesome.
Cool. Yeah, I wouldn't go with StarCraft 2 itself. I will go with Brood War. My favorite, absolute favorite thing about the maps is a map called Loki 2 that had a very incredibly tight choke in the center of the map, which meant that if you wanted to pass an army across there, you simply couldn't, and it would stream very slowly. But at the same time, it had two side paths around that very tight choke. And that feature, even when it nowadays it looks very dull for StarCraft 2 map makers, to me when I saw it was absolutely mind blowing. I love it. And to this day I still try very hard to make maps such as Loki 2 that has that very curious tight choke in the center. Yeah.
Okay.
Ragu had made a remake of the map in StarCraft 2, in the StarCraft 2 engine. I also for the Team Liquid Map Contest 6, I tried to submit a map that was based part in Loki 2 called Kansan that had some very tight chokes in the center. Like very, very tight chokes. A Thor could barely pass.
Cool. Tail?
I'll go with the gold bases on Habitation Station because they completely changed the way we look at gold bases and they made for a really unique map. It was always really interesting, for me at least.
Alright. It's a good answer. Good answer. Chris?
Maybe I'm just weird, but like I thought Neoplanet S was like the greatest map ever.
You hate CG Hero, so obviously you're weird.
But... No. The reason why I really loved Neoplanet S so much was because it was the first map that I can really remember being used a lot in the pro scene that just didn't have a watchtower on it. Like, you had those, like, two different pathways, and it was really fascinating to see Flash versus Life during the launch party. And Flash would make individual Widow Mines and just send them to, like, different parts of the map just to, like, spot for different movements around the map. And, like, before that, like, I know that sounds dumb, but, like, before that, like, people just didn't do that. People, like, coming out of Wings of Liberty, everyone just, like, kind of kept their armies grouped up in like little bundles and like move them around, and like occasionally if they had to scout for like specifically where they were going or what they were going to do, they would send out like a marine or something like that just to check. But people weren't just trying to get map vision around on different parts of the map, and so having that kind of like circular pathway along with no free vision to me was kind of astounding because it just changed the way a lot of people played and made the game a lot more active.
Yeah, and I do like that feature as well. I think the effect that it had on players like Life for a good while to come, and eventually that the behavior fell off as watchtowers became more common again,
right,
was to like run individual wings all over the map and just burrow them everywhere so that like the individual burrowed wings would give vision. And that was common for a while, was for players like Dong Regu did it quite a bit, Life did it quite a bit, was just make 20 lings and just burrow them all over the map. They're not going to do anything except sit there and give vision the whole time. And that was, it was like making like eight, it was like the equivalent of making like 5 to 6 observers. You just had vision of specific spots. It was really cool usage. So for me, my favorite feature is probably going to be like that 2v2, or it might have been 1v1, I can't remember for exactly, the Shoutcraft map with the acid bath in the middle of the map. Where, like, if you
run
into the ground after a certain time, you just bathe in acid. Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Okay. I like weird features like that, that just modify time. The only thing that one really does is just heavily modify game timings. It just entirely changed the way game timings worked. You couldn't... timing, like, attacking at specific times became much, much more difficult. You had to combine it with things like Nidus Worms or Drops, if you actually wanted to do it at all. And there were some really cool strategies that came out of that. And that I'd like to see that type of feature implemented more on ladder maps, maybe, at some point. I've never seen a good if Blizzard would let you. There are features that could be good that I've never seen used well that I wish would be used well, like island map, like island bases. Unfortunately, I think they're a little bit unfair in terms of racial balance. I think they favor Terran a little bit too much. But I mean, there's a lot of fun features like that that would be really cool to see.
I don't know about because
with carrier buffs coming in Legacy of the Void, a really good like warping mechanic with the warp prism, a better Nidus worm kind of. Maybe,
well, sort
maybe
of.
Island maps. Yeah, sort
yeah,
of.
maybe in Legacy island maps will be usable. We'll have to, or island bases will be usable. I'd actually like to see an entire map that is nothing other than just like island bases. It's just, I mean, it would be a little bit unfair to whichever race is.
Had the idea where your main and natural would be on its island, would be on its own little island, like your main and natural, and then the rest of the map would be on one big mega continent island kind of thing. So you'd actually have, you'd start on an island, and you have to progress to the main or the rest of the map to keep expanding.
Nidus Network!
I think Recall would be a good
map. There'd be a lot of really cool, interesting things that come out of that. And the map probably wouldn't be balanced at all, but whatever.
Probably not.
I just want to play it. I play random right now, so I'd have fun no matter what.
I would like to see more. I would like to see specifically for maps, tournament users being more open to non-standard maps and using their format to favor non-standard maps by giving players time to prepare, either in a team format or major leagues.
That kind of
like
brings up the
league
problem. I mean, a lot of tournaments have to use WCS maps, though, or ladder maps in general, which is WCS
Koreans
maps.
Koreans don't give a shit about it, though. Koreans
yeah,
don't.
Korea doesn't. Korea's basically okay, but they're still kind of conservative or getting more conservative about maps nowadays.
What
like,
is your...
Even in WCS, like, you have some time to prepare for your matches. If WCS told players maps in advance, rather than telling them what maps they were going to play, like, rather than having them choose on the spot, I think it could be much better for non-standard maps. Because then players can prepare first.
I also agree, but you will still have players that don't really play that tournament alone. They play a ton of other tournaments, and they need to spread their time into playing other maps. They can concentrate all the time in a single non-standard map. This is more of... I really don't know how you could tackle this issue, because no matter what non-standard map you add, players will still better it. Even if it's a standard, if it's outside of the WS map pool, players will better it.
Yeah, I guess.
Right.
It's either a veto or a...
Veto,
cheese your butt out on that map, because people don't really want to learn it. It's like, oh, I have to play on it? Time to 2-gate proxy real quick. You know?
Sounds like Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, essentially. Like, whenever there's a new map that's just, like, even slightly different, it just gets cheesed on for the longest of time. Annoying as a map maker. But, yeah.
So, we actually forgot to bring this up, which I wanted to talk about earlier. So, I'm going to bring this up real quick and try to make it as quick as possible. So, back when Foxtrot came out, we loved the map over at the Team Liquid team, strategy team. We did the review. Foxtrot was, in fact, several of our favorites to win the whole thing. It was really interesting. It was freaking gorgeous before the like aesthetics got gutted, but you know, we already mentioned that part. Foxtrot was designed at a time where Terran had been underpowered against Protoss for a long period of time, because the previous map pool had all sorts of like blink shenanigans going on, like maps like Yondu.
Yeah.
So players were... So Foxtrot was specifically designed to be a little bit stronger for Terran and a little bit weaker for the other races in order to try to balance it with a map change. Unfortunately, Foxtrot became significantly less popular than it deserved to be because it was released at the same time that Blizzard released a balance patch which simultaneously nerfed Blink and buffed Terran. So switching to a Terran favorite map at the same time Terran got buffs and Protoss got nerfs was way overkill for fixing Terran. And the effect was is that suddenly everyone who was playing against Terran hated playing on the map because Terran was just way stronger than they were supposed to than they were expected to be when the map was made. And that sort of disconnect is really unfortunate between Blizzard and the map makers. Because, well, it was a really good map designed for a time that was not played on.
Yeah.
Does that about sum it up, Cantuva?
I was pretty pissed off when that happened, especially because I was trying to ride with everyone, everywhere I called. So I hope that maybe David Kim and the development team could read up that I was making the map especially for Terran. And this also happened not only to me, but the other map makers. For example, the creator of Catalena, Team A, also made his map with Terran in mind, trying to overcome the issues that Terran was having. We all just got like pretty pissed off at that time. I don't know what else to add. The thing, especially because the map was not only made for Terran in mind, but to the viewers in mind, and trying to screw up the pro gamers as much as possible. That way pro gamers will be forced more or less to create action in the map, because also the time the metagame was getting quite static, not really stale, but static in the early game. There was no pressures in the early game. It was like, go take your first three bases as set and wait for 12 minutes where you have your Mutalisks ready. And even when TBC was quite a dynamic matchup, all the Protoss-related matchups were quite stale, well, static. And I made Foxtrot trying to break Protoss and trying to force the race to generate pressure. Same with Terran, trying to generate pressure against the Zerg, because Zerg can't really take these three bases as early because the Zerg has some rocks blocking it in part. But I don't know what else to add. It was a sad period in my life, I have to say.
It's okay. Foxtrot was a great map. It was played at the wrong time, but it was a great map.
I loved it.
It redeemed itself like at the end of his life when the players got used to it and they were like being more aggressive as I had intended. Luckily, God smiled on me and the map turned out to be balanced even when Terran was stronger in the map.
As long as Terran and Protoss didn't spawn like top left to bottom right and like the Protoss had like literally nothing they could do about it, like apart from situations like that, it was fine. I do remember seeing one game where the Protoss player had literally nothing they could do about it because of those spawn positions. So he went charge lot Archon and hoped the Terran would attack. Just like, he's like, okay, I have no other choice. Let's hope this works. And then the Terran was like, oh, you went charge lot Archon. I'm just going to sit in my base for 2 minutes. And then had ghosts. And then the Protoss was like, aw. Sad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that had something to do with the rebalancing as well. So... Okay. What is everybody's favorite maps aesthetics wise? Like just to look at. Chris?
Cloud Kingdom. It's just too beautiful. Cloud Kingdom was the best.
With Space Shark, I presume?
Yeah, with Space Shark. Just gorgeous. Space
Shark. Time Twister.
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah, come back the thing is that...
Yeah.
The thing is that
we'll come back
we here. Know, like, so many maps that it's so hard to... Let me find some links. You
yes.
guys...
Yes, link it, definitely.
All right, Teo, what's your favorite map to look at while he's looking those up?
Ohana, of course.
Of course.
To look at, though?
Yeah.
Because you see Domination.
It's a pretty... Yeah, it's a pretty map, and I see the blood of Zergs on it.
All right, so my favorite is Fruitland.
Oh yeah, Fruitland was amazing.
I
forgot about that map.
The aesthetics of Fruitland. Mind the lemons! Mind the lemons!
Mind the lemons!
That was a cool mechanic,
Fruitland,
too. Like the lemons were basically destructible... Like, the lemons were basically destructible, mineable rocks. Like, you went out there and destroyed them. And they were respawnable.
Yep.
That was, like, a really cool mechanic. It was just destructible rocks that turned into, like, this uber mineral patch that you could pick up and just bring back to base for, what was it, like, 400 minerals?
Yeah, it was a pretty good, decent chunk.
Yeah, and then every, like, few minutes, the lemon would respawn. Like, that was really cool. I love that map. Fruitland was awesome.
Oh, no. No,
awesome.
Sorry. That the right. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry for disrupting those. But yeah, I am trying to find the links, and I found out that some of the links went down. So my favorite ever map, pretty wise, is Vector. You guys can show it there. In
yeah,
the stream.
I already linked it. Yo, we had
yeah.
the same idea.
Maybe
Vector is a
yeah.
Vector
is a testament to patience. Because
yes.
the ground textures wasn't just... It's not just he just didn't pick a texture and then put it all over the place. He used, like, two or three different textures together, and then he used a very tiny, tiny paintbrush and cut out textures.
Wow.
To give that kind of look. So it... Like, even just that little
That's
spot
impressive.
Right outside the main and natural, it must have taken probably... like 45 minutes or so, just that spot right in the natural choke.
Who did this?
So
yeah, and not only that, but
Genesis
doing this is very hard because you need to find the correct textures so they can blend correctly. Otherwise, it will look absolutely awful. And I'm not joking. It will look absolutely awful because
yeah,
I have done it. And it
yeah, a lot of textures have a very similar pattern. So if you find the ones that have a similar pattern and then you kind of cut them in and around each other, they both look different, but they both go well together because they have a similar pattern, if that makes sense. So that's kind of like what he used here. He found like the perfect textures, perfect color scheme and everything. So,
wow, that is impressive.
I mean, the map itself isn't the best of maps, but like its aesthetics is the best, I think.
Yeah.
It's a cool looking map.
That's
that
really
is
cool.
A
I mean,
very pretty map.
You can link in some of the detailed shots he took.
What's that other map Chris is showing on the keep showing on the stream? The like blue one.
Phantasm. Enigma.
Oh
yeah.
Enigma. That was a good one too.
That one looks
Terraform
familiar.
Looks great. Terraform on ladder looks great right
oh,
now.
Oh wow,
actually.
This blue map with like the weird cube like laser cubes all around the outside and stuff? Like force fields or whatever. That's
yep.
cool looking.
Yeah.
Looks like a pretty small map.
Before,
boy, that's cool looking.
What's it called again?
Yeah, and the textures are also custom made, some of them.
Here's the...
Some of the textures. I really don't know. Like, there is so many maps that are absolutely beautiful that they never see play. It is, for like many of us, it's like heartbreaking because they are absolutely, they are works of art, basically.
Yeah, unfortunately, the pro players are more interested in, or at least at first, seem to be more interested in like the balance and gameplay mechanics that they want to play on, and then the aesthetics after, rather than the other way
no,
around.
No, that's the correct way to do it, but still, some of them are like... Beautiful.
Yeah. So, okay. I guess we can take. I guess we can take questions now. If anyone from the audience has any questions for us.
If you don't mind,
more accurately, if anyone has any questions, if anyone has any questions for our two expert guests, I guess would be better.
I'm trying to find questions here in the chat.
All right, so I just want to let everyone know here who may not have known about it. These guys really are. There's a new map making association that they formed, StarCraft Map Making Association or something, SMA or whatever.
Yes,
do I have that right?
Yes, this is the SMA. Time Twister does not form part of the SMA because he's like literally Hitler, if you guys haven't heard.
Well, I'm not part of it because. Right now, I just don't think it serves much of a purpose, at least until Legacy of the Void. But we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's. I think having. Right now.
I think having a group that that makes maps and works together on like ideas of maps and can form an opinion as a group as to like what should change in the map making rules or community in general is probably a good thing, even if it doesn't wind up going anywhere.
It is.
So
it's existed.
I
existed for a long time.
Yeah, I
know, but I think you guys did. I would be very happy if you guys were a lot louder and more annoying.
No, I am trying, but I'm overloaded with work because I'm like setting up the website and things, meanwhile making maps and trying to stay competitive in the game because otherwise if I don't play, I suck, and I don't want to suck because if I suck, then I won't be as good making maps. And at the same time, I have college and I have a ton of other issues. But the thing, as Time Twister said, is that we already have a small place where we talk about maps and such. And that is the StarCraft Map Cave. And that's exactly one of the reasons why he doesn't think that the StarCraft Map Association is as necessary, because we have the Team Liquid Map Contest that is where nowadays the only place, the only thing that we really do, basically, because there is no other incentive for us to make maps outside of the Blizzard, of the Team Liquid Map Contest.
Hopefully we can get more interest in events like Shoutcraft with Total Biscuit and people like him to give you guys some more incentive to make some cool maps. Because I don't know about everyone else, and it didn't seem like it was the most popular event in the world, probably because of the it was only hosted on MLG instead of Twitch in part, and a few other things. But Shoutcraft was pretty awesome. The maps were a lot of fun to watch, even if they were horribly imbalanced. Yay, giant Giga Cannons. So, I mean, it's just in general, I'm really happy you guys are here and are working hard on this stuff. The game's a lot better for you guys being here, and I hope you can be really loud and annoying so that people don't forget you're here, because there's a bad habit people have of forgetting about the map makers. So for anyone who doesn't know, these guys released a map pack recently of some really, really cool maps. I'm posting the link in the chat right now. I think Chris can probably put it up on the stream if he wants to.
Sure.
So everyone, and if you get the chance and the time, you should go take a look at this, because there are some really awesome maps in there that really deserve some playtime and some feedback for the map makers to see how people like them.
Yeah, and all of them can be found in the custom map section in any server just by searching SMA. That's it. We are all going to be uploading more and more maps. All of our maps will have the SMA tag, so you don't need to memorize the name of the map. You can only search this tag, and it will give you all of our maps as a list.
All right, so we did have a couple questions here, it looks like. So for our two experts, if you could design a map feature like a destructible rock or Zerg egg, which one would it be? So if you could design your own map feature, what would it be? What's your highest priority?
My favorite idea is having different rock levels, like what we're talking about, because it's both very Blizzard-like, and it would do a lot. So like if they had, you know, they have standard rocks, but then if they had boulders, and then they had pebbles, and pebbles would be a very weaker version, boulders would be a very stronger version. but the best non-Blizzard idea is probably that mineable rock idea that I kind of shared earlier. Like, that would be cool. It'd be very specific knowledge needed to, like, utilize it and learn it and all that kind of stuff. But it would be awesome. Like, it would be so cool.
So a whole bunch of different kinds of new rocks. A man after Dustin Browder's heart.
It sounds so boring, but it sounds absolutely boring, but it's true. It will really give us, like, a ton of new tools to work with.
All right. Do you have a different answer to that question?
Yes, and I have already done it. Destructible Zelnaga Towers.
Destructible Zelnaga Towers is pretty cool, actually.
How about
you can place? And you can place Zelnaga Towers.
Then of course you'd have constructible Zelnaga Towers after.
No.
To abuse destructible Zelnaga Towers as protests.
What? What?
I How really thought of a way to piss people off. Like, you just do a timing, and along with the timing, you destroy the tower, and then you do a follow-up all-in, and the opponent doesn't see you coming because there's no Zelnaga tower.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the reason. I made you go out in the map. And not only that, but if your opponent detects that you are doing a timing to destroy the Zelnaga tower, and he wants the Zelnaga tower, he will go outside in the map and try to defend the Zelnaga Tower because it's an asset for his strategy. It is.
What about neutral?
I love it.
What about neutral sensor towers instead of Zelnaga towers?
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, that also
that
works.
That might be. That's cool too. There's a lot of
I haven't messing around with so much with the data editor trying to make neutral sensor towers. But yeah, it sounds like tons of fun, especially using them around the edges of the map for Protoss versus Terran. So Protoss can detect heavy, big drops without needing to place pylons everywhere on things like that.
Coming, but you wouldn't necessarily know what the units are until it's like right up in your face, because that's the difference between a Center Tower and a Zelnaga Tower.
Yeah.
So,
cool idea with like Zerg creep having neutral patches of creep all over the map. So, like a Zerg could drop a queen and start spreading creep right in your base, or do a spine crawler rush, or interesting things like that hide their spire more easily. You know, like it would be totally imbalanced, but it would be cool nonetheless.
I know. No force fields, Arya.
The creator of Cloud Kingdom, he took Ultralisks and he burrowed them on like bridges and chokes, and burrowed Ultralisks still break force field. So he had neutral burrowed Ultralisks in chokes and stuff, so you couldn't force field the chokes.
What if you just killed the Ultralisks? Would you then be able to force field the choke?
But then he also made a version where he like took that, and then he made the Ultralisks invisible so you couldn't even see them, and then indestructible so you couldn't kill them. So they would still break force fields, essentially.
Oh god, it's like Attack on Titan in the walls.
It's essentially chokes that you couldn't force field ever, and it was an interesting idea.
That sounds like a very convoluted solution to create a no force field area. Like invisible, indestructible, burrowed Ultralisks.
It works. That's all that matters.
It does solve the problem. It just seems like a weird answer. That's a cool thought.
I tried to do it before without making them invisible. And I ran into issues with frames per second and performance problems. So you need to make them invisible if you want to use like a ton of Ultralisk burrows. There is no way around it.
So what do you think of Blizzard's policy on unique maps when all they do is use imbalanced features which are kept out of maps for reasons?
Sounds like a loaded question.
That depends.
It does
sound
like a loaded question, but
it depends, because a lot of these imbalanced features that a lot of the community hates and says they know are imbalanced, such as like backdoors, for example, were just done wrong on the vast majority of maps and need to be either kept going, like kept attempted on maps, without being just excluded or ignored immediately, kind of thing. But then there are those very blatantly stupid things like, you know, a natural ramp that needs 5 force fields to close off or something like that. I think that kind of stuff just...
Well, that's because you are Protoss, I am Seth, so I'm completely fine with that other matter.
Well...
That did be, actually, that's a cool feature somebody mentioned. Detector towers. Towers that do nothing but give detection over a large area.
That would be interesting.
Like, they don't give any vision. They don't give any vision at all, but anything like within the radius of them is just decloaked.
Yep.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Every time that you say like anything with that kind of features, instantly try to find a way how to make them work on a certain map. So I just go mind blank.
I'm thinking of like overgrowth, because there's the Zelnaga tower in front of the access to the natural interred. So if I'm Protoss, I'm gonna have an observer around there. If that tower is a detector tower, it makes it way harder for Protoss to defend against Terran, because I can't have an observer spotting.
Yes. Yeah, there's things like that, of course, and then burrow, like it'd be harder to burrow banelings and stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
What do you think of the notion of having, so in Warcraft 3 you had mercenary buildings, like you could look up and just recruit some mercenaries with some money, and they tended to be worse than your own units on average, although they might have a special ability or whatever, but they were instant. You just clicked the button, spent the resources, and they came out immediately, so they cost like no time to produce. What do you think of the notion in StarCraft 2 of having like a neutral building somewhere where you could like walk up and just like get a special unit?
I have no idea what that would do, but I feel like people wouldn't like it very much. Because people already are mad about the Mothership Core being a hero unit, essentially, so...
Yeah,
I feel like
Think of
the brain...
Think of timings. StarCraft 2 is generally based on some very sharp timings. In this case, if you allow the Protoss to have an extra Ultralisk of some Colossi or some hero unit, it will make the timing attack that much stronger. And it will probably end up with people not liking that at all.
I mean, it depends on how much they cost or whatever. But I think
it also depends on whether... I mean, if you have to make the unit, like, if you have to get to the building to buy the unit, then you have to, and like, win control of the building to be allowed to make it, like, then you have to fight over it and it's objective on the map. And it's not necessarily guaranteed for timing or whatever. It's
time twisted. Think of the new Sunshine map, the diagonally mirrored map, where if he had the two gold bases, one at each corner, instead of one of the gold bases being a gold base, you could have this building, for example, and you could deviate the timing push all the way around, so Protoss could take his hero unit, for example.
I mean,
it would work.
It might work, but I don't think it would be very StarCraft-like. I think it definitely
belongs in
Warcraft for a reason and not StarCraft. So,
okay. You don't like the flavor. That's a reasonable response.
Yeah, it's...
All right, so why don't we wrap things up here, since we've covered most of it. It looks like I got most of the questions. So, you can follow our two experts here. Their Twitters are listed here for people watching the audio. It's at TimeTwister22 and at Cantuva. Cantuva is KANTUVA.
Yeah. Also,
and the rest of us...
It's at StarCraft, at SMA Melee. Let me type it out here. Because that's the Twitter account of the StarCraft Making Association. For the guys to follow, because we will continue to putting out content of maps, and we'll try to start making blogs and writing out our ideas and things like that. It will be very fun.
All right, so that's at SMA_Melee.
Exactly, yes.
Right.
I'm sorry, my accent is very, very strong. I need to try to talk more.
Not at all. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
you're quite understandable. I'm just clarifying just in case. You're fine. Just fine. All right. So, we been a wonderful time here with our experts. We actually ran longer than any of our previous shows by a bit, because we didn't want to let them go or say goodbye. but unfortunately, Teo is sick and needs to not die. And all good things must eventually come to an end. So thanks so much for coming, guys. Thank you. Look forward to our next episode in 2 weeks.
See you guys later.
I will try to be. I always miss them because I have class around this time. And before you change the time of the show. But yeah, I will try to be around the chat and trying to ask questions to you guys. It has been tons of fun.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Right. Bye.
Goodbye.